Unfettered Mind.
Hello, I'm Ken MacLeod. Chue, which is the Tibetan word for cutting, can be defined as using difficult experiences to develop your ability to be awake and clear in whatever life throws at you. This 7-part series was recorded during a retreat I gave on Chue. It explores its origins in the Diamond Sutra, the relationship between Chue and taking and sending, as well as the prayers and practices for a daily Chue ritual. Here is part one.
You take down the spots a little bit. Anisha knows. I feel like I'm in the Apollo Theater or something. Yeah, thank you. The rest lights you can take up a little bit in case people are taking notes and things. This represents or is our first full day of retreat. It's very good to be here. The very, very clear from the sense of in the meditation hall here and also in the interviews that everybody comes to this retreat with a pretty clear and pretty strong intention. And that makes for a good practice environment. There are a number of different themes that have emerged through the interviews. I just want to touch on two of them briefly, because they're both quite important. The first, and this has a little bit to do with Chue as well, Dharma practice, Buddhist practice, is not really about trying to make things better. It's about developing the capacity to experience things just as they are. Some time ago, I came across a quotation, one of these little refrigerator magnets from Winston Churchill. When you're going through hell, keep going. Don't try to make it better, just keep going. And there's something really solid about that. So whether you're working with waking up to what is ultimately true, or whether you're working with waking up to what is relatively true, whether you're working with the emphasis on emptiness or on compassion, on everything being like a dream, or taking and sending, the fundamental intention and aim of the practice is to bring you into the experience of now. Exactly what you're experiencing right now. So, in your practice, whenever you feel you're not really connected with it, move into the experience. whatever it is. Sometimes that will be pleasant. Sometimes it will be unpleasant. It doesn't really matter. And that actually is what we learn by doing this over and over again. We develop a capacity which we haven't had previously to experience things which are intensely painful sometimes, and sometimes intensely pleasurable, which we weren't able to before. We just shut down in the face. And so we gradually cultivate the ability to experience whatever arises in life. And that's how we become present. The second point is a reiteration of what I said earlier this afternoon. When doing, taking, and sending, make sure you do both. If you only take, you'll get first become sad, then start to despair, and then sink into depression. And then you're going to curl up in a ball and we're just going to have to wheel you out. And if you only do sending, you end up somewhat intoxicated with happiness and very, very removed from actual experience of the world. Do both, and make sure that you do both, because when you do both, the fixation on either cannot and will not hold. So you stay in the experience of what is. Here's the two points I wanted to go over. Now this evening, because this is our first full day, I'm not going to talk at great length because I think we're all a little bit tired, a little bit drained from the heat possibly. But I want to give a little bit of background to Chö. I'm just going to give a little pet peeve first. Many of you know this one. A good friend and colleague of mine, Sarah Harding, recently finished this book. And it is a translation of Matchik Lapdran's own explanation of Chö. And she's done a very solid job translating it, a very thorough job researching it, and a good job putting it all together. And you will see that it is spelled C-H-O umlaut D. Well, the D is only pronounced in a dialect in the far west of Tibet. In the rest of Tibet, the D is never pronounced, and yet everybody in the west is going Chud. That's my pet peeve. It's pronounced Chö. No, there's just Chö. Who? Well, there's Chö, but that's the word for Dharma. That's a totally different word. And that's Chö. And not Chö. And it's a tonal language, you see. But there are two spelling differences. One is it's Chö and not Chö. And the other is it's U, not U. So they're very important differences. Now, Matchik Lapdran was a woman who had a natural intelligence, and she had the good fortune to learn how to read, which was relatively rare for a woman in 12th century Tibet. And she was able to read very well. So she was regularly hired by nobility in her region to read scripture, because this is the way that you earned merit. And among the scriptures that were available to her were the Prajnaparamita, the perfection of wisdom. And because of her intelligence, not only could she read it, she could also understand it. In Tibetan, you learned how to read without understanding what you read. And there was another whole step to actually learn the meaning of the words. But she was able to do that too. So she spent hours and hours and hours reading the Prajnaparamita literature and just loved it. And on that basis, that's how her faith and inspiration for practice came about. And she had a number of teachers. Her principal teacher, Lama Sunam, is relatively little is known about him. But at one point she had some dream signs, I think, or vision, that she would meet a very dark-skinned master from India. And when she went out of her house next day, this guy was there. And his name was Dampa Sangje, and he's also often called Pa Dampa Sangje, Pa meaning father. And the interaction between the two of them is very fruitful. Padampa Sangje developed a system of practice which is known in Tibetan as Shije, which is to make peaceful. And Machik developed a system of practice which we now know today as Chö. The names for both of these practices come from the Prajnaparamita. Shije comes directly from the Heart Sutra. And if you read in the Heart Sutra, on page 13, therefore the great mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great insight, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra which makes equal what is not equal, the mantra which completely calms all suffering. And it's that which calms, that's what Shije means, makes peaceful. And so that was where the name for Padampa Sangje's system of practice was taken. And Machik's was taken from what is popularly known as the Diamond Sutra. It became known as the Diamond Sutra because this is how it was translated from the Chinese and Japanese, which was the first contact with it. If you were translating this from the Tibetan, we wouldn't translate it as the Diamond Sutra, we translate it as the Vajra Cutter Sutra, the Dorje Chupa, though. And that cutter is the same as chö, means to cut. Now both of these systems of practice shared a common feature, which is totally consistent with what we're working with here today. But one has to remember that today we have access to a far greater range of teaching and instruction than anybody has had historically. I mean, every one of you has more access to instruction and teaching than most of the lamas who lived in Tibet. Now, you may find that hard to believe, but up until the 1950s. It was, if you trained in Zen, that was in Japan. And that was it. If you trained in Theravada Buddhism, you were in Burma or Laos or Sri Lanka or Thailand, and that was it. And if you trained in Tibetan Buddhism, you were in Tibet. That was it. And you knew nothing about the Theravada tradition, and you knew nothing about the Zen tradition. And the Zen knew a little bit about the Theravada tradition because they shared a couple of sutras, but not very much, and nothing about the Tibetan tradition, and so forth. And the same with the Sri Lankan. The Sri Lankan teacher that lived in L.A. came to see Kala Rinpoche, and Dr. Ratnasara was a wily old goat. He's a real, very astute guy. And he said, oh, I want to meet your teacher, Ken. Delighted. So I came out, and sitting with Rinpoche, and Dr. Ratna said, in the Theravadan tradition, and he named four of the 37 factors of enlightenment, we have these teachings. Kala Rinpoche leaned forward. Oh, do you? Well, in the Tibetan tradition, we have those four, and then right after that, we have these five. And Dr. Ratna said, looked at him and said, you know this stuff? And he was genuinely surprised. He didn't realize that they share the same basic texts. This is the degree of isolation that existed up until the middle of the last century. But now in Los Angeles or in San Francisco or in New York and many other cities in this country, you have access not only to every Tibetan tradition, but to most of the Zen traditions, to all of the Theravadan traditions, and Chinese and things like that. And one really does have access to these. So the amount that we're able to enjoy this way is very, very different. In Machik's time, you lived in one village, and it was usually surrounded by mountains, and the only people who went over the mountains were the traders. Because it was very perilous. It was a very, very difficult journey. How many of you have seen the movie Himalaya? Yeah. You get an idea of what it was like. You know. It was very, very difficult to go from place to place. So you might have one set of texts, and that was it. That was all you're going to have access to. So when you think of it in these terms, what Padampa Sangjay and Machik Laptun did, was to develop a different way of approaching practice. And at that point, except for some very, very secret stuff that was carried on by people like Marpa and Milarepa, the vast majority of people, monks in the monasteries and nuns in the convents, they would do refuge, and they might have a few teaching on bodhicitta, but most of the time they were studying logic and morality, and they studied that ad nauseum. And that's what their practice consisted of. They had relatively little access to other teaching. And the whole idea was to gather the, to do good work by doing prostrations and confession and doing virtuous acts and so forth. So you gradually matured into some kind of awakening. And a lot of these people never got a lot of instruction in meditation itself. And what Machik and Padampa Sangjay said was, you can go right into this. Go right into the experience and discover the awakened nature of experience by experiencing what arises completely. This is what. And Padampa Sangjay's take on this was, okay, suffering comes, open to the suffering completely. And as all of you know from your own experience, when you open to the suffering completely, the suffering is calmed. Because by opening to the experience of suffering completely, remember suffering is the reaction to experience, By opening to that experience of the reaction completely, the energy that goes into the reaction goes into one's attention. So you stop reacting, you may experience pain, but you no longer suffer. And you're just right there in the experience. And this is the essential point of Padampa Songtu's approach, which at the time was revolutionary. Machik took this a step further and said, well, not only do you do this, you actually create really challenging experiences for yourself. And then you go straight into them. And this is the Vajra Cutter quality. Don't wait for stuff to come. Make them happen. Sound familiar? So, and because Tibet was a country that was just steeped in mythology and demons and things like that, what you did was invoked this, all of these things that people were very, very afraid of. So they go off into strange places and invoke them and get themselves totally terrified and then rest right in the experience of being totally terrified. And they would cut all of the preoccupations. So whereas Shijie or pacifying works to pacify the reactions through attention, Chö cuts the attachment and the confusion that accompanies reaction, so you're right in the experience. The full name for Chö, how's it go? I can't remember. I don't take time digging it up in here. But basically, it's the clear-cut Mahamudra. Clear-cut is in what they do on the West Coast, you know, just chop all the trees down. Here, the forest is the forest of thoughts and emotional reactions to things. And you just cut. And then you're in space Mahamudra. That's the actual name for it in Tibetan. Now, because Chö worked very directly with Tibetan, these elements of Tibetan culture, it became very, very popular and totally misconstrued in Tibet. And I just want to read how Jamkhon Kongtrul opens up his commentary on, this is a short commentary. There we are. It says, this teaching known as the clear-cut Mahamudra belongs to the middle turning of the wheel. These refer to the three turnings of the wheel, three cycles of teaching the Shakyamuni taught, and is connected with the deliberate behavior practice in Vajrayana. The deliberate behavior practice in Vajrayana was a whole set of practices, various gradations, in which you would deliberately engage situations to see how solid your meditation was. So, for instance, if you were pretty sure about your cultivation of compassion, you go into a bar and you jostle somebody. And when he picked a fight with you and hit you in the face and knocked you to the floor, you'd observe whether any anger came up in you. And if it did, then you went back to your cave. In in this practice, you embrace what is undesired, you gather adversity, and you come to understand directly that all demonic manifestations are your own mind. And you know that you and others are equal. Through this, you cut right through the inflation of attachment to a self-image or ego clinging. If you don't understand this teaching this way and use it with the hope of being able to subdue and control demons and just uses two different kinds of words for demons, or you want to become famous and well known so that people will support you with food and other offerings, and you look at what are your own projections as enemies and yell hung hung and pay pay at them and engage in this kind of contrived behavior, this is the incorrect practice of chu. This is a huge mistake. So right from the beginning, make sure that you practice this the right way. So obviously there was a problem in Tibet with this practice. At the beginning of the first 3-year retreat I did, a very distinguished Lama of the Kagyu tradition came to visit us, and a really extraordinary person, very quiet spoken, very, very quiet presence, and we had just started practicing chu, so it was very much on our minds. And so we said, could you explain chu to us? And he went, oh, it's so long since I've practiced chu. Because he was in his 80s at this point. He said, oh, it's probably 50 years. Oh, I don't think I can remember anything. Oh. And then this is what he said. The secret practice of chu is Mahamudra, which in our parlance, direct awareness. The inner practice of chu is taking and sending. The outer practice of chu is offering your body to gods and demons. This is one of the reasons that I wanted to include chu in our work here in this retreat, even though it's a whole other body of teaching. Because of its intimate connection with taking and sending. Now, tomorrow, in the teaching, we're going to be talking about how to transform adversity into the path of awakening. And there are particular instructions of how to do this. And several of those instructions refer more or less directly to chu. So that's another reason why I wanted you to have this background. As Conkrell says, this is not about gaining power. It's not about developing sorcery abilities. It's not about being able to heal people. It's about cutting through what causes disturbance. And the method, Chö actually combines a number of different methods. And they're all based on the fusion of emptiness and compassion. Chö is a dramatization of what takes place internally when you are awake and present. So by acting out this drama, which you do with a bell and a drum and everything, and by acting this drama out, you create the propensity within yourself. And you speak directly to the intuitive faculties, if you wish. So that when you encounter situations which cause disturbance, what you've trained to do in Chö just happens. Now, when you're deeply trained in the Dharma, something happens in life, something unexpected, somebody insults you, or it doesn't matter what. When you're deeply trained, the occurrence of a stimulus triggers an openness in mind, and you just go open. And in that openness, you experience what is arising. Anger coming at you, say. Now, the ordinary reaction to anger coming at you is you push it away, and now you have a conflict. And what happens is when anger comes at us, it triggers, it resonates with anger inside us, so that anger comes up. But rather than experiencing that anger, we either suppress it and it goes into the body, or we express it, where we push it away and we go into conflict. But when you're trained, you go into that openness, the anger arises, and you don't react to it. And you don't suppress it. You give it all the attention that it needs. In other words, you experience it completely. What happens then? It subsides. It releases itself. And you return to open awareness. That is what is actually being dramatized, whether it's fear, neediness, greed, pride, jealousy, all of these demons representing all of these different emotional reactions. You summon them. And you first identify with the openness of the perfection of wisdom, emptiness. Then you invite it all in and you give it whatever it needs. What does it need most? Or what are we most attached to? What is the one thing we're most attached to? Our body. So we give it our body. All of these things. and they're happy. They cease to cause any trouble. And that's it. Now, to do this, we have a little bit of fear, unease, discomfort to deal with, and that's what the practice cuts through. Cuts through all of these self-protecting mechanisms so that we can be completely open and present with what we experience. How are we doing for time? Okay. So let's take a few questions, and that's probably enough for this evening. Kevin. Yes. Well, Tibetan Lamas didn't send their practitioners into the slums of Lhasa either. So I'm not sure that your comparison is accurate. But where? Oh, I'm not sure about that. Hanging out in cemeteries or the cremation grounds in India wasn't a really very safe place to hang out because there were a lot of thieves there who went and stole from the corpses. And if you were hanging out there, they don't want somebody witnessing them. So they weren't that safe, actually. But the point is, so your question boils down to where do we go to get scared, right? Well, there's another Kagyu teacher, Tulok Trengwa, who is a very profound scholar, and we studied some of his work in retreat also. He wrote his biography, and which I had occasion to read. And one chapter of his biography I loved, because it spoke just to this point. And I translated it under the title of How I Live the Practice. And after the retreat, you can look it up on Unfettered Mind's website, because it's up there. But it starts off with, I've never gone into fearful cemeteries and other frightening places. But I know of no place more frightening than the reactive attitudes of mind and the demons of the eight worldly concerns. So it's one thing to go and find these places outside in the world, but really, if we look very carefully at what anger, greed, pride, jealousy, desire, so forth, do to us. You know, the most frightening place to be is right inside, because they regularly hijack us, create all kinds of turmoil and confusion and mess in our lives, and we do nothing about it. You know? So we're being mugged inside all the time. And I know from my own practice, and many of you have expressed the same thing, when you actually encounter, say, your anger or your desire head on, that's actually pretty frightening. You know, it's like, so that's where I suggest you go looking for this stuff. Right inside. That's where it really counts. Okay? Other questions? Yes, come on.
I'm talking with the secret
Sure. Oh, yes, certainly. The secret chö, which is to say the essence, that's Mahamudra. Or you can call it Dzogchen, or you can call it direct awareness. Doesn't matter, it's all the same. The inner chö, it's what you practice just as a meditation, that's taking and sending, what this retreat is about. And the outer chö is offering your body to gods and demons. Other questions? Now, there's one text in here, which is, starts on page 31. This is a prayer that was written by a teacher, I think in the 16th or 17th century, generally known as Karma Chakme, who's a very prolific writer, great devotee of Amitabha and Chenrezig Zi. And this is a prayer he wrote, it's actually a little prayer service to about Machik Laptrum. It's a form of guru yoga. So you visualize her on top of your head or in front of you. Either is fine. It says above my head because that was traditional in Tibetan tradition, but you can also visualize in front. And there's a description of her, and then the actual prayer starts on the top of page 32 and goes down to give me the energy to attain the stable understanding. Just a second. No, sorry. It also includes the next verse. And through this connection, bring great peace. And then what follows after that is what is known in the Tibetan tradition as pointing out instruction, pointing out the nature of mind. So, if you want a connection with the secret chö Mahamudra, this is a very good way to get it, because it's pointing directly to how things are, and similar to the instruction that we were working with this morning. Yes?
Does that suggest a way that Tonglen is related to Muhammad? In other words, if after doing Tonglen for a certain amount of time, you've also had an experience.
Well, remember what I said at the beginning of this evening. The purpose of all practice is to experience precisely what is arising right now. As you do Tonglen or taking and sending, you become more and more adept at what is experiencing, what is arising right now, because you're training yourself. As soon as something arises, if it's negatively flavored, you open to it by taking in the same thing from all sentient beings. As soon as something pleasant arises, you open to it by giving it away. And by doing this, you're actually training to be in the experience of what arises. And when one does this, you find that the taking and sending falls away and you just rest in the experience of what arises, which is Mahamudra. And you can actually work all the way from the outer. You can just do chö and keep offering to gods and demons, but in doing so, you'll find yourself opening more and more to just what you experience, and doing the same thing in a taking and sending kind of way, and then gradually dropping into the Mahamudra. So they're all very intimately connected, yes. Any other questions? Okay. Then I won't keep you up any later. Have a good evening. good night's sleep, I hope. I think we're off to a very good start for the retreat. Thank you for your efforts, and I'll see you in the morning. We'll observe silence again from when we stop now, so don't stay up all night talking with people. Observe silence and go through right until we finish lunch tomorrow. Okay?
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you do wish to use a part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.